exciting.
Welcome to PDGA Radio, the season summary edition. I'm Grant Zellner, along with Jennifer Allen, and we're finally home. How's it feel?
It feels so good. It feels so good to be home. Last week kind of flew. That was my first week home. And it's crazy like how fast your days go. I have not went back to work in healthcare yet because I actually have four more events I'm playing in, one being out of the country. So not going right back into healthcare. So just being home and trying to get back in the flow of things and getting my kids, you know, settled and schoolwork and all of that. So the first week flew by so fast. It's crazy like how quick a day goes by when you're really still not even working.
That's a good point. There's no off season for any of us. There's always stuff going on, but we are going to pause today. We're going to look back at the season that was 2022, both on the Pro Tour and at PDGA Majors. We're going to talk a little bit about the off season, and then we're going to look ahead to 2023. It's just Grant and Jen today, and this episode of PDGA Radio starts right now. So the first thing I want to do today, Jennifer, is we're going to look back at 2022. And I thought it'd be fun if you and I just go back and forth for a while and just talk about our highlights. What is it that we are going to remember from this season? Obviously, you were on tour, back sort of on tour for the first time in a while, where you were really focused on traveling. And this is my first year of really following the tour in person on the road.
Yeah, this was actually my first year on tour. So we did it together, our rookie year, Grant, because I have never not worked in healthcare and only golfed. So out of 22 years of playing, this was my first year to actually tour. So it was exhausting. I've told it many people and said it many times that I really felt like touring full time was more stressful and harder and more exhausting than when I was managing somehow to still work full time and go play a lot of the major events.
Right.
And the only thing I can attribute that to is mentally coming back and resetting, you know, but also right. I think the game and the tournaments have changed so much that it's almost impossible to do what I used to do. Because, I mean, man, when you're out there on the road, your travel day is Monday, you're practicing Tuesday, Wednesday, and the tournaments were usually starting on Thursday. So there really isn't that time to go home and come back anymore. Like it's
right.
It's a full-time job being on the road.
Yeah, no kidding. And we've had to learn how to try to fit in doing something as simple as a podcast with guests and things like that in the midst of all of this. And it's been a new experience for me as well, coming from live radio to something like this. It's been a lot. I think I got on an airplane 11 times this year, and I don't know in my life. That almost equals the number of times I've flown total in my whole life prior to this year. And that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
So that's been wild. And then on top of that, there's the actual, like what we saw on the course, what you got to perform on the course yourself, but what you also got to witness, you know, right there sometimes on your card. There are going to be a lot of memories, I think, of this 2022 season.
Yeah, this was definitely, it feels like a breakout year, not only for disc golf. I mean, we've grown with, you know, the jump in numbers with COVID the last few years, but this was, you know, the amount of money we were playing for, the number of events, the number of players, how many European players were able to stay over here so much longer. Like, this was just a huge full year on so many different levels. So I think it'll be a year that we all remember and kind of maybe see as a stepping point to where this game might be going.
Yeah. We blasted past normal.
Yeah.
We didn't get back to normal. We went from normal to COVID, and then we waved at normal as we blew by it on the interstate. And we got highlights this season and we just started listing them. So, I mean, Owens Coggins, let's just dive right in.
Just literally gave me goosebumps because it is so true. Like, what an incredible year. And we can definitely, there's not a better place to start, I feel like, than with Owen. She jumped to a career high of 975. That's, she's always been a high rated player, but she is like tied to the second highest FPO player. And, you know,
right.
Owen has always been good, but, you know, there's so many players, Kat and Paige and, you know, Hannah and Evelina, like they used to be our high rated female players. And to think that Owen has, you know, surpassed them, what an incredible, you know, accomplishment for her. She even played, there was a couple of our big FPO players that played MPO last weekend, Katrina and Owen, finishing third along with the men last weekend. So this season is not yet over for a lot of us, but she won over $50,000 more this year. And jumped herself up to ranked fifth in the U.S. So, like, what an incredible year. And I know Owen would say it's all goes back to how hard she works. And 100%, I have never seen a man or woman put in the amount of work that Owen does. There's never a day off. Whether it's practicing the entire course, even after a round, or just hours of putting, she works so hard. I don't even know how she continues to put in that much work. But she has, and it's 100% paid off for her.
And she's a Masters player. She's eligible in the Masters division, which is another thing that I think is going to start happening more and more often in the game of disc golf. Not unlike what has gone on in traditional golf, ball golf, whatever you want to call it, where because of modern, you know, improvements in terms of diet and exercise and things like that, it's almost like it extends your window a little bit and it gives you the chance to be competitive. Even if not on a week in, week out basis, it gives you a chance to be competitive situationally, later and later in life, and to not only be competitive, but to be truly successful. And I think Owen is going to be looked at as maybe a little bit of a pioneer in that particular regard, because I don't think she's going to be the first one. I don't think she even is the first one. It's just, it's been such a noteworthy year for her. I think she's getting a lot of attention for very good reason.
Yeah. And I mean, golf, either with a disc or a ball golf, we know it's an ageless game, you know, from young to old. That's why it's such an incredible sport and activity for everyone to do, just for health wise. But I hope that, you know, Owen, Sarah, myself, Justin, FPO going, you know, like we're really proving that there's still so much talent out there, and it's just as much in the men. I'm not trying to say that it's just the women, because we have some incredible men. But like, hopefully all of us on the MPO 40 and 50 and FPO side as well, we're going to be able to carry this through to where for the Masters, you know, we're going to have the money, the purses, the huge events, you know, hopefully like this is going to allow us to have the spotlight a little bit too, because there's so many incredible players in both the men and women's fields that, you know, we can grow together, basically, is kind of where I'm getting at that. You know, the open and the age protected fields are going to grow at the same time because of the talent. So just like ball golf, you know, like you're saying, once they're done, like you don't watch the Masters as much, you know, in ball golf as you do just the elite players. And so hopefully we're going to grow together and both continue to excel at the same time, whether that be in just open or age protected.
I feel like I should go back and mention, that's okay. But I do feel like I should go back and mention Juliana Korver too. Oh, also, sure. As someone who's competitive, as well, I just don't want to get accused later on of leaving people out, even though I know I'm going to. But since Juliana jumped to front of mind while you were talking, I figure I got to mention that name as well.
Yes.
But let's stay in the FPO division for a little while. Haley King. I mean, Haley didn't play as many events this year for, some injury related reasons and stuff like that. But won U.S. women's, and I was there, and there was something really special about that. And you could feel it. You could feel it sort of in the air. There was just something about it that I think was really, really noteworthy. And I think it's even sometimes things are special because you can't describe all of the reasons why. And that's kind of this thing for me is having been there and followed that event very, very closely. You and I did commentary for one of the post-produced outfits there at that event for Ace Run. And so being there and amongst it and then seeing that happen and seeing the emotion and the joy and all of that, not just for Haley, but for other people, for Haley.
Right.
Right. Owen Scoggins practically tackled her, I think.
That's Owen. Yeah. Owen.
That's going to be a highlight for me when I look back at 2022.
Yeah. Haley only played 16 events, but that one being most important to her because that's where she's from. That's where I believe her first. I don't know if it was her first open event or just first event period was like that's where she learned, everything kind of. So there's so many ties emotionally. Personally, for Haley, where U.S. Women's took place this year. We carry a lot of weight on our shoulders. So she didn't have the big event or the big year that she wanted to. And so I think getting a huge win like that really just solidified to herself that, okay, I may not be having the year that I wanted or expected to, but I still have the talent, to be here amongst these women and to win. And so I think that was the emotional power that kind of was really felt for her. Speaking for, I'm like, this is just my kind of takeaway from that. But, she switched major sponsors this year. She went from Discraft to Innova, and just a lot of things personally that she's dealt with for more than 1 year. And so I just think that was just a lot of weight lifted off her shoulder. She did, after Worlds declare that she was going to take a little bit of time off personally to continue to work on herself. So even though she had always played and, loves Green Mountain MVP, she chose, personal health above those tournaments. And I think that's something that we're going to continue to see is that we can pick and choose now. There's so many big events and our health is really important, whether that be physically or mentally. So I think we're going to start to see this a little bit more. But I was super proud and excited for Haley that she was able to get that big win to prove to herself that's a personal goal, that she has what it takes. She is so young and she is so talented. So we're going to see, I think, a lot from Haley as she continues to grow as a person.
Yeah. And getting to do that at U.S. Women's in front of that crowd, to those listening right now that may not be, maybe you're new to listening to this podcast. Maybe you're newer to the game. Maybe you came to the game here in the last couple of years because of, the COVID boom and all that. U.S. Women's is special. It's there are loads of divisions being competed that weekend in that community. This year it happened to be in Madison, Wisconsin. There are amateur divisions and there are different age divisions. And then there's the FPO division. So everybody gets a chance to not only say play in their division or watch their friend or family member, then they can venture over to the other courses and watch, say the FPO field. And get a chance that they otherwise might not have to see professional disc golfers play. So, when that event wrapped up, that gallery was charged.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool. So that's another reason why that's going to be.
I remember the exact numbers, but I know they were record breaking. I believe there were somewhere around 100 FPO players. So just that alone.
Yeah,
and then I think total I'm throwing this out there, but I think there was around 400 total. something like that. Does that sound about
I
right?
I would have to look it up on the fly, but I do know you're correct in that the numbers were huge. really like, big and
shattered. Like shattered records. Yeah. So
Kristen Tatar.
Whew. Wow. What a year. Never finished off the podium.
I read that on like a tweet or something a week or two ago, and I had to go like I believed it, but I wanted to see the actual numbers never higher than the number three. So I went and looked up her profile on PGA.com.
Not only that, like I think most of us, you know, I'm sure I'm just throwing out, like I'm sure, you know, Sarah, Paige, Kat, myself, like a lot of us FPO players who have played for a really long time, we've all had those years where like I think I've even had a year that I only won. You know what I mean? Like, but there wasn't there wasn't the talent in the players. Like Kristen did this when the talent and the numbers in the FPO division were like no other. So that is, wow, that's incredible. She was already one of the highest rated players in FPO. She jumped 10 more points to what has to be 988 has to be, that has to be a record, I would assume. I don't know,
like for her or for like all time,
all FPO players. I feel like 988 has to be up there as the highest point we've ever achieved. So I'm going to throw that out there. Hate me if I'm wrong, but I'm sorry, Paige or whoever, if they've hit that. But
it's in the list. Let's 988 in the list
has to be
for like a season-ending rating. It's in the list for highest. That's for sure.
She's ranked first. She won. Here's another. Wow. Take this stat. She won almost $100,000 more this year than any other previous year playing.
For her, you mean?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Personally. Personally, she won over $100,000 more. And she only played 23 events. No big deal.
Oh, right. We keep forgetting that. We brought that up when we had her on the podcast a few weeks ago, how she kind of, in a way, got stuck in Europe at one point because... Yeah. They couldn't, she and Silver couldn't come back to the States when they wanted to. So they ended up missing a handful of additional events.
I don't think she plays a lot of events anyways, but when you compare, you know, to the men and things like that, you know, that's just, I mean, mind blowing to me. Even just to see in a year, a woman make over 100,000. I mean, that's some of our career. Like, we haven't even reached that, you know, many of us for our careers. So that is just what a year. I mean, I hope we continue to see years like that. But even if we don't, I mean, wow, that was just a record breaking year on so many levels for Kristen. And she's such an incredible champion. You know, she's our world champion. And so, what a humble, respectable champion that we get to look up to. So I think she's an incredible person and golfer, just full package, like very excited for her as well.
No doubt about it. Well, so my first thought was, okay, let's jump to the MPO field. And then I remembered after the fact that the first person I want to talk about sort of had a bit of a breakout almost in the very first big, like lots of eyes on it event of the year. And I'm talking about Gannon Burr, who didn't end up winning that event. He lost it in a playoff to Drew Gibson in Las Vegas. But that was, if he wasn't already on everyone's radar, which, I mean, let's be honest, he should have been. He certainly was after Vegas.
What, 17? I mean, he's played.
He is now.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was then.
He's played longer than some of these new, young, upcoming stars. He's played for a long time, but yeah, I mean, like
maybe he's 18 now. I should look. I should look up his exact birth date.
We can be just wrong on several things on this, but yeah. So this,
can he get an R-rated movie?
This kid, sure. I don't think so. but yeah, he played 30 events this year. Won almost $70,000 more than the previous years.
30 events.
Yeah.
That's youth right there.
Yeah. 43 rated and jumped to the ranked fourth in the U.S. touring ranking. So, yeah, a little bit of a year for that kid.
You know, Gannon represents a wave, I think, and you brought this up earlier before we came on. He represents almost like a wave of younger players that are now building their life around disc golf and around the ability to travel to some degree.
Right.
Whether that means choosing to be homeschooled, or maybe they already were, or whether that means other arrangements that they're able to make with their family. Because a lot of them at this age are traveling with a parent or a guardian of some kind of course,
right,
as would should be expected. But it's just interesting to me to see this sort of this new wave of this sort of happening with players of this age.
Well, and I can tell you from a parent's point of view and being there, you know, I started really young as well. Like, the money wasn't there. And so I think now we can, as a parent, look and be like, okay, this isn't just for fun. Like, this actually can be a career, something that you can sustain a nice lifestyle with. You know, back when I started, it was like more of a hobby, you know, like you're like, oh, look, I won and I broke even for the weekend. Like, so, and which still sometimes that's part of it, but it's just a totally different level that I think as a parent, you can totally support your child that this is an incredible goal,
right,
to do, you know, to make a life-changing decision as dropping out of school or homeschooling or things like that, you know, like that's a big decision for a child and a parent.
And we saw other players too. We saw Robert Burridge, right, finishing a playoff with Simon Lazat in Des Moines. You know, Robert Burridge was last year's AM US champion. Evan Scott was last year's World AM champion. That's what it was. You know, both of them are other examples of players who have, you know, in Robert's case, I think he's working himself around college at Michigan State University and still playing a lot, you know. And there are players in the FPO field also beginning to do this, I think, a lot quicker than in years past. And you brought this up, Jennifer, the way the history of our sport mirrors the history of a lot of sports. And this is a separate conversation in terms of equality and all that. But so oftentimes what happens on, say, the men's side and then what happens on the women's side comes later. It's not coming as later. It's becoming in lockstep. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's happening in real time. And you've got FPO players now that are, say, winning an amateur title, saying, okay, I'm going to be a pro. And then boom, they're on the pro tour and they're at least competing to finish in the money. And if they can do that enough, plus a sponsorship, now it's a viable career path. Mm-hmm. And that's happening. And I think that's really something kind of, you know, special.
Sarah Hokum told me a couple of weeks ago that looking statistically at, you know, money and career earnings and stuff like that, the FPO players are some of the highest paid athletes. Athletes. We're talking WNBA, tennis, you know, LPGA. Like, we're up there. And to me, that was like mind blowing. MPO, not as much, you know, they're NFL players. Their baseball player, like they have some pretty big,
you know,
money.
Tom Brady and whatever.
But for the women, as athletes in other sports, that's not there like it is for the men.
Right.
And so the fact that disc golf is able to be up there with some of the, you know, big professional sports, like to me, that was, it made me be a little bit more proud to be a professional disc golfer. Like, that's, it's really a thing now, you know, something you hold your head high.
Well, let's just kind of stay in the category of just highlights of the year. We had in the amateur ranks, right, PDGA majors of all different levels, not just the ones that pro tour players compete in. You had, well, like at AM Worlds, which I got to attend, you had guys like Paul Kranz, who ended up winning AM Worlds and has now gone pro. You had Ilkin Groh, who won USAM and then was right in the hunt for AM Worlds, neck and neck with Paul and one or two other members of that lead card. And you've got, they have already declared, they, since AM Worlds in like June, or actually I think it was, yeah, it was June. It was very late June. They've become pros And, you know, they're working with sponsors now and they're getting out and they're playing events. Cadence Burge on the FBO side. How old is Cadence, or how young, maybe I should phrase that, is Cadence?
She is younger than my middle child. She's 15 years old.
She's like 15 and 7 months or something right now, which means she's had her learner's permit for 2 weeks.
That is crazy. And already playing both open and advanced, won a major. You know, these kids are just, they're so young, but accomplishing so much already. You know, you can play in three different divisions. She's played junior divisions this year, advanced and open at 15. That's crazy.
I hope this isn't some kind of a personal spoiler alert. Cadence won her first pro open event like yesterday.
I think. OK, so I may correct you a little bit on that. I think she's won a couple open divisions or open events this year, but she just declined cash. So this weekend, we might have seen a little bit of dollar signs in that PDGA. So she may be playing amongst us in the FPO division next year.
A milestone either way.
That's really cool. 15. So crazy. All these, you know, young kids out there. And it makes me excited, too, because I still love getting into the PE programs and teaching it. I can proudly say, like, if you kids pick up this sport in PE, this may be your career, you know, versus an activity for you just to do with your family or to do by yourself. You know, like I give all these examples when I get into the schools and I teach these kids about this sport or activity. But now, you know, I could say you can grow up to be the next world champion as I'm teaching them in the third grade.
Right.
And they could do it by middle school.
So before we leave this, you know, highlight reel behind, maybe two more people to mention with respect to everybody. We could mention so many people, lots of first time winners on tour this year, lots of people that were in the hunt for the first time ever, all that kind of stuff. We'd probably be remiss to not mention Ricky and to mention, you know, and the fact that he was able to exercise what is his favorite sort of game plan for success, which is consistency, consistency, consistency. And then to be able to pay it off in the super truncated format of the Pro Tour's, you know, season long championship, because, you know, that's an interesting format with the buys and everything like that, and anything can happen. So to be able to be consistent and then pay it off, I think was kind of a cool situation.
At a course that was very difficult. I mean, you needed accuracy, you needed confidence, and you needed a little bit of luck. Like, that was a very difficult course to be just like, I'm a good, consistent player, so I'm going to win. You know, that was a very difficult choice on courses to play. And then Simon Lazat, how about another one?
Yeah, let's wrap it up with a victory lap.
Yeah, there is absolutely run around the circle. Intended. He only played 17 events this year.
That's crazy. But I feel like I saw him so much.
Because he won four of them. So, again, going back to, like, as, you know, top elite players, we're going to be able to choose. Do you want to play all of the events so you're guaranteed, you know, maybe a weigh in on that, the Disc Golf Pro Tour end of the year finale, where you're guaranteed some pretty big money? Or do you pick and choose your favorite huge events, only play those, cut your season in half, enjoy life, stay healthy mentally, physically, play, you know, smaller events or events you've never played before just to get off the beaten path? I mean, it'll be curious to see where all the top players go and what they choose to do.
Final question. We've been talking about this 30 minutes and I can't believe it. It feels like we've been talking about it for about 90 seconds. Jennifer, what are some of your players to watch in 2023?
So many. I'll start with the women. I know Owen will be out there because she will probably not take a day off this off season.
Right. No doubt about it.
same thing. We have our very consistent players, you know, Paige, Missy, Kat, Sarah, Haley. I know we'll see them back.
You mentioned Haley earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that they will continue to see them at the top. I'm curious to see if we will get back to seeing Paige up there dominating more frequently again. You know, this was pretty much, I would say, an off year for her, even though she took some big wins.
It's crazy that the standard is changing like that, isn't
yeah,
it?
That yeah.
Like what we consider a dominating year now has a completely different definition than right. It might have just a few years ago.
Right. But are we going to see more people be able to challenge Kristen? I mean, Kristen won't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like she can, right. I don't know how much better she can get, but she's definitely not going anywhere. You know, will we see Ella Hansen and Holland Hanley and some of these other, right. you know, breakout players continue to push? Or will we see some new young ones that we don't even, that aren't even in the mix of these names?
Oh, sure. No doubt about it. Right. You know, on the men's side, and some of these, I'm just going to tell our listeners, are players that you brought up mm-hmm. being even closer to the game than I am. You know, you've got Kyle Klein, you've got Anthony Barella, right? Some young players that have been on tour now. They're still yeah. obviously yeah. very, very young, but they've gotten a certain amount of experience, just even just the life on the road part.
Yeah.
Right. They've kind of got that figured out. You've got some guys that have maybe been around a little bit longer, but are also still young, like Adam Hammes. You know, is Adam Hammes gonna, you know, sort of break through mm-hmm. next year? You've got some people that were sort of breakout seasons this year in terms of notoriety. Will they now start to win? Guys like Isaac Robinson, European players, Nicholas Antala.
Yeah.
And players like that, you know, they're going to be fun to watch next year.
When I listed those, I was really kind of thinking some of these young stars, because we were, you know, had talked about Gannon and Cadence and all these young athletes. So that was kind of where my mind was going when I was listing some of these guys, because they're so talented and you can see not only were they, you know, the talent is there, but their consistency is improving, their confidence is improving, and possibly their focus, you know? So right. I think that's part of it when you have these young kids. You know, AB's still in school. He's still in college, and, you know, focus is here and there. Adam, you know, these guys are still having fun. And so will they realize to get to that next level, even though they're right there at the top, to mm-hmm. push them to getting some of these huge elite series wins or even major wins? You know, will that only just be focus and determination? You know, so at what point do these kids, you know, like Gannon, you can tell, wow, focus, you know, that he's got his mom, whether that be because his mom is right there right. with him and making him, you know, right. go to bed early and, you know, eat a healthy diet, who knows? But I think that's a huge part of it is maintaining focus, knowing that this is my job. But on the flip side of that is, you have to also, you know, stay happy as well. You can't let it just overwhelm you mentally to where it kind of pushes you over that edge. So,
right.
It'll be exciting.
Well, I mean, with respect to the literally several dozens of players that we could name each of you by name and talk about the reasons why next year could be the breakout for those players in 2023. No doubt about it. It's going to be an exciting year. I also want to talk about real quick before we leave it, the so-called, I don't want to use the word older players, but players that
players like you, Jen, no,
that are proving, but they're proving that experience continues to matter.
Yes.
I'm talking about Matty O.
Yeah.
You know, for example,
who's still young, but who's played young. Forever.
Right, exactly. Right. And there's a whole category there that I feel like is sort of resurging in a yeah. way. And that's yeah. really cool to see. So
or
many highlights of
JK,
this year.
You know,
JK. Perfect. Exactly.
I mean, she's proud to say she is over 50 and coming back and hanging with all of us. And so, right. again, ageless sport. So
all the way.
Yeah. Stay
Lots
healthy.
To look forward to in 2023. Continuing the theme of looking toward 2023, Jennifer and I have pulled up the calendars, and there's a lot to mention, at least on the calendars. And we know that you can pull them up yourselves. You can go to pdga.com and you can pull up the major calendar for 2023 and see all of the PDGA majors. Likewise, the Disc Golf Pro Tour just announced their calendar for next year. But we got to hit a couple of the highlights. The first one on my list, of course, is the PDGA Champions Cup. Hugely successful this past year in its inaugural running. It's back at W.R. Jackson. It's the first major of the year, as it is intended to be and remain. And it's going to be along as of April 20th next year. So you don't have to wait too long when 2023 starts and the weather starts to warm up a little bit before we're going to be playing major championship golf. And you're going to get to watch. You're going to get to potentially spectate. So that is a highlight in and of itself right there.
Can I tell you what I'm excited about?
Yes.
I'm excited to see a few of these kind of spread out.
Well, yeah, they are a little more spread out, aren't they?
Yeah. And I, meaning just majors. I mean, because clearly there's going to be a ton of other tournaments in between these. But personally, you know, talking about how we played both Owen and I, and Sarah didn't play all of them, but we went back to back majors two separate times. This year that we were playing Worlds, followed up by Tim Zielinski, back to back majors. We played the Masters World Championships, followed up, was it by US Women's or vice versa? But we had two different weeks that were back to back actual major championships. And I can tell you that's exhausting. So me personally, looking at this schedule, I'm like, sweet, we've got a few weeks in between that. We've got a month in between this. And so I think that is exciting. It does, maybe with the Masters World Championship followed right up by the European Open, that one I did drop out of last year because it was back to back as well. So I haven't personally.
Yeah, Masters, Worlds, and Euro. You're right. It's going to be back to back again this year, which is virtually unavoidable.
Yeah.
To have at least something back to back.
Right.
But a couple of quick highlights. This, if you recall, this past year, Masters and Junior Worlds were sort of held together.
Right.
In the same venue during the same week. They're going to do the same thing this year, only this time it will be Am Worlds and Junior Worlds. Those will be back in Peoria, Illinois. Tim Zielinski's much earlier in the season next year. Instead of being in September, it's in late May.
Yeah, I like
that. You know, that's a cool development. We've got Masters Worlds in Flagstaff. Those that have been around long enough can remember Flagstaff hosting other world championships in years past. And so the courses and just the whole environment there, it's, you know, a little bit mountainous, right? It's pretty.
July should be beautiful. It should be
great.
It could actually still be pretty toasty. Bring your sunblock. You're at least 7,000 feet up, I can personally tell you, in Flagstaff. And if they play snowball, that goes up to 10,000 feet elevation. Ooh, so even if it's like 80 degrees, if you think it's going to be cool, trust me, it's a little toastier when you get that high.
Right.
So that should be super fun. Awesome town to be in. So that one will be fun.
Pro Worlds at the very end of August and into September, just like it was this year, only this next year it's in Vermont, which means, of course, no Green Mountain Championship, because that's a new sort of, I don't know if rule is the right word, but policy. If you host a major, then
I love that
you're not going to host like a regular tour event. I do too.
Just because it just was so, last year was so packed, even though DDO was a great practice for Worlds. Mm-hmm. They made a lot of changes. I don't know personally if the changes were better, but because of how the course played at DDO, they made some pretty big changes. For Worlds. Although it really had, I think, to do with the time of year. You know, DDO was earlier and the springtime was tremendous wind. And so they made some changes. But I like the fact that that town has to focus on one big event. Let's make the best of it versus spreading it between two events. So I think that's a great new policy.
And then U.S. Women's, a different time in the calendar next year,
yeah,
not until September 21st to 24th in North Carolina. So U.S. Women's is coming at a different time of year, kind of like Tim Selinsky is. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, interesting to say the least. I don't know when it comes to changing dates. I'm sure there are people that love it, and I'm sure there are people that for reasons don't like it, and everybody's personal calendars and all that are going to be different. But I do think it's interesting sometimes just for the shift, just to see how things change with different times of year. So that's going to be exciting, at least from a travel standpoint. It's going to be, yeah, I think, interesting from a viewership standpoint, and I'm sure it's going to be interesting for the players.
And I think time of year, you know, we were in the Carolinas about that time this year, and the weather was really nice. So mm-hmm. as long as there's no major hurricanes coming in,
right,
the end of September, I think the weather should be beautiful. I know they're already working on the layout now, so hopefully that will be a very successful event as well.
Have you gotten to look at the DGPT schedule? Are there any things that already jump out at you in terms of
I honestly changes? Have not.
That's like, not surprising. That wasn't meant to
catch you. I'm looking at this now, like just like viewers, I guess. As we're scrolling through this podcast, I am checking out the schedule.
Right.
I haven't bought a new calendar. I'm still a paper person, so I will be putting all this down to pen and paper and trying to see what fits in for my life. There's just so many big tournaments that it's a pact. So you just got to wiggle them in.
I know, right? As you might expect, I'd say probably, 75% or ish of the pro tour schedule, maybe even more, is virtually the same as it was this year. The weekends are basically the same for the same events, but there are some noteworthy tweaks. There's a new Elite Series event called the Open at Austin. That's going to be part of the Texas Swing. The Music City Open is back on the Elite Series schedule. They had a Music City Open this mm-hmm. past year. It just skipped a year in terms of being, an
at
up there
level.
Event. It had been a national tour event, if you recall, a PDGA national tour event before. There's the new, I guess you'd call it Elite Series Plus mm-hmm. events, mm-hmm. where it's still an Elite Series event, but it's going to be heightened in terms of its coverage and in terms of a number of other factors.
Yeah.
So Portland Open is going to be the first, I believe, of the Elite Series Plus events. Ledgestone Open, that's probably not surprising that it would become one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of Silver Series events that are brand new. The Blue Ridge Championship at North Cove is kind of a bridge to get people to the right part of the country before the Champions Cup.
Yeah, and, I like that.
What else is going on here?
A lot of these names are the same. And I think that's because they were very successful events. Like, I think everything's being fine tweaked enough that we know, okay, the courses played well. They were fair for multiple levels. And so I think everything is getting a little fine tuned to where we're not going to see some super major changes, but I do like how they try to bring in a few, like you said, to kind of gap getting from one part of the country or city mm-hmm. to another. That's helpful.
It gives you a reason to travel beyond just one weekend.
Right.
Like if I'm going to go all the way across the country, I need a reason to, be there for a while. So, here's another event or two that sandwich around, a major or whatever.
And
that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. When I left Tim Zielinski, driving up to Vermont, I did stop and stayed a night in Rochester. I didn't play any courses, but I will say it was absolutely gorgeous up there. So if I am on tour, I definitely will be looking into that one as well. I think that's a good swing on the way up. And it looks like a super incredible schedule.
And then the other new event is the Discmania Open in Prince Edward Island, Canada, which I've heard of events there. I'm so curious about that location, about like getting to it, getting in and out of it for the players.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some of the courses in that area. I don't know exactly which one it's going to be played on, but it's gorgeous.
Canada has always been on my list. It's just, again, nothing has ever, like, I've never had the time to fully make it over there, but there's been a lot of tournaments that I wish I could have played or wanted to play and couldn't. But yeah, beautiful courses, beautiful weather, I would assume that time of year. So basically, Grant, what I'm looking at is if you don't have your visa and you and you want to play golf next year, you better go ahead and put that on your off-season list of things to do. We're going to need a visa for next year for sure.
Get those passport photos. Get up to Kinko's or wherever and get that taken care of.
Get everything ready for travel next year. Got it. Okay. So enough about last season. We need to start working on next season, right?
Yeah, I guess for the time being, enough about next season too, because there are a few months before things get going. And I know we joke that there's no off season, but there is a little bit of time to maybe get some work in on your game.
I think the off season for some of us just means there's not a major tournament every weekend. I still have four on my schedule. Yeah, I think Owen still has like three on her schedule. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing you can see the change in players that truly consider, like, they won't allow themselves. Like Kristen, you know, she told us, her and Silver, boom, that tournament's over. They are on vacation and done, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a few of us that are just like diehards that don't stop, and we play, and we have, maybe depending on where we live, you know, Owen being in California, I'm, you know, here in Arizona. So we have some nice weather to play in. Although I will say, and you know this, Texas, Oklahoma, we play all winter and it can be nasty. So it may be just not where you live.
We play anyway. But
just diehards.
50 mile an hour winds yesterday here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I thought it would be cool to just go through a little list of, you know, you and I, you obviously a touring player, me out amongst the touring players. We do a lot of what I say respectful eavesdropping, meaning I'm not saying revealing anybody's secrets, but I'm saying we have a lot of conversations and we listen during interviews, and you've conducted interviews as part of this podcast. I conduct interviews almost every time I'm on the road. And so what I started doing is jotting down some notes on one particular topic, and that is what players say they want to work on next in their game. So assumedly, these are things that players have said openly out in public, I want to work on during this coming winter. And the first one that I wrote down was Owen, because I was around Owen so much this year at PDGA majors and masters majors and stuff. And I heard her more than once talking about how she's going to be focused on adding distance. And you pointed out, Jen, to me the other day, she already has.
I noticed that early on in the season and commented to her, and it might have even been here at the Memorial, you know, early on in the season in Arizona. I feel like she gained like 50 feet already, at a minimum 30 to 50 feet. And I really think it was due to the fact that she's just playing so consistently. And so timing is perfect. She's built up strength. She's so tiny, you know, so I think her muscles have developed more. But yeah, man, Owen's going to be deadly if she gets even a little bit more distance. So that would be incredible if she manages to find that this off season.
Before I forget, while we're talking through these pro players and what they're going to do, make sure you hit us up on Twitter, the PDGA Radio Twitter handle, and let us know. I'll put a question up there and you can let us know what you're going to be working on as you sit here and listen to us talk about what some of the best in the game are going to be working on this off season. But anyway, who's another player that comes to mind, Jen?
You know, Kona had a huge, we had a lot of talk about her at the first of the year with her big signing, but then didn't have quite the year probably she was wanting to have maybe as well. I know Kona and I both would say, you know, mentally, that the strength of our mental game and putting is huge. So Kona had posted recently that she is starting to work with some coaches on that. It's not just on the course, you know, that we have to work on our game. So I think the off season is a great time for that. And so I think it's in the open out there that's something that she's going to be working on. So I'm curious as well, you know, coming from a player who struggles in those areas too, to see how much that helps her next year.
Well, and Kona's not the only player that has mentioned we're starting to get players on the Pro Tour, at least here in disc golf, that are working with coaches. And that's mm-hmm. super regular now in other sports. You right. hear about sports psychologists and you yep. hear about different types of life coaches in addition to the obvious, like on the court or mm-hmm. on the field coach in other sports. That's becoming more and more the norm. And I think it's for two reasons. I think one, it's because the quality of play, as you mentioned often, Jennifer, has gotten higher and higher. But I think it's also life on the road. The right. grind of this right. lifestyle is something that merits some mental health consideration. We right. need to, people need to be. And
it's
I'll a, say it for my sake.
It's not just a thing to say. Like it's
I'm
true.
I'm not even, I know. And yeah. I'm not even a player. I mean, I play casually and I play as an amateur and I'm okay. But traveling mm-hmm. this year has been new for me. It's been new for my family, and it's taken some getting used to, and it's yeah. taken some conversations with my family in terms of how to get balance sort of back and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So this is all legit stuff
yeah.
that deserves some off-season attention.
Paul Uliberry also posting, you know, that he also has been working with a coach, and
that's right.
And did very well. I think his first tournament back after that. Mm-hmm. So I think that might be something that we start to see more. It's definitely been something we've talked about for a while, having, you know, a sports psychologist and stuff when you kind of hit that wall. So
right.
it might be something that gets pretty consistent for some of us or all of us.
Other things that I've heard various players say at different times during the season that they're going to be working on. I've heard Gannon Burr talking about pace of play. And talking about how he's focused and committed to doing certain parts of his game quicker. And I think he's actually begun, I've begun to see personally changes in that, in not only Gannon's game, but some other players that have focused a little bit on getting a routine, maybe a little quicker, or, you know, shortening up another part of their game just so that they're more ready to play. And it's noticeable, but it's not easy. And so props to players like Gannon, who have been very candid, say, yeah, I'm going to try to learn to play faster and focus on this.
Well, so. I think it's also clearly this year been put out there that that's going to start being called by.
Yeah, it's a
not
point
only
of emphasis.
Players, but officials that are on the course. And so definitely, you know, those players who know that they push those limits better be aware that that is something that may not be tolerated anymore.
Right. And I think they are. And I think most of what I've heard from most players is like is a very candid. Yeah, you're right. I need to play faster. Or yeah, I'm going to focus on that or whatever. And I props to them. But mm-hmm. I know it's not going to be easy. So that's a good off-season kind of thing to work on. How can I shorten my routine? So, yeah that's a good example.
I know Drew and I need to work on our forehand. How about you?
That's actually that's one of the things that I'm working on this winter is when it's cold and I don't want to go to the course, I can go right outside my, you know, garage here and I can throw, you know, forehands into the screaming north wind here that happens in Oklahoma
right.
and at least get reps in. And I'm going to do that.
Well, I think it was just clear this year how important, you know, when I first started and Des Redding and JK will all agree that forehand wasn't a thing.
Right. You know?
And so that kind of started, I would say, early 2000s. And most of the guys were only kind of doing that off the tee. And so I finally realized, you know what? I couldn't do it off the tee. It hurt my elbow, but I could do short forehands. And so that's right. something, you know, I worked on a little bit this year, but I know I'm going to work on it in the off season. And Drew and I have joked about that as well. He actually has a pretty decent forehand, but it's kind of an upshot forehand as well. Not something that, you know, you're trying to get max distance on. It's more just mm-hmm. for that hyzer shot in that is needed. But, you know, look at Kristen, like she dominated her game, being able to stay in bounds. And, you know, when the backhand wasn't there, her forehand was just so accurate.
Right.
And same with Owen, you know, her upshot forehand is so money that they save so many strokes having that forehand. So
no doubt.
And you know, the incredible, you know, Aaron Gossage, his forehand, we got to see that this year, you know, so a lot of huge forehands.
Chandler Kramer.
Chandler, great forehand. So I think it was clear this year that it's hard to dominate and win just being, you know, able to throw dominantly forehand or backhand. I'll say either or. So I think it's clear that that's something that needs to be on the list.
Well, and course designers are beginning to take mm-hmm. that into account, and they're really forcing players to showcase all types of shot shapes during the course of an 18-hole round, maybe in a way that they didn't used to, years ago. So cool stuff. Well, and thanks for, letting us know what you're going to be working on so we can be highly judgmental here in 3 or 4 months. All right.
Thanks, Grant.
Well, before we shut things down for this week, Jennifer, I want everyone to get a chance to hear what you've got going on next. You said a few minutes ago, and I don't know if people caught it, that you something about needing to get your visa updated.
Yeah. So not only a passport, but I have to get my Australian visa ready to get over and go back down under. I've been there twice before, but to Perth on the West Coast. And this time we are heading to the Sunshine Coast over on the East Coast, north of Sydney, Brisbane area. And I am very, very, very excited. And I know we have a lot of Australian listeners. So g'day, mate. Did I practice it right?
They don't like you now. You went and did it.
They can make fun of me all I want. I'm excited to see them. So hopefully, I know that they're very excited that a few of us are going over there. I'm not alone this year, which I never have been. There's been quite a few Americans that make it over there. But this year, Scott Stokely's going, Drew Gibson's going. There's 31 MPO players in this, the Australian Championships.
Most of them from Australia or New Zealand or right down there, yeah. Right?
Simon Feezy, mm-hmm. Luke Bain, Dylan Fieldman, some of the top MPO players going. There is 6 FPO players, myself, Cassie Sweeten, Sarah Lee. So it should be a lot of fun. There's a lot to do there. The course looks pretty demanding, both open and some wooded shots. I've heard it's very hilly. So, it should be interesting to see. The last time we were there, there's definitely the kangaroos everywhere. They're like deer. So the morning poo all over the course and, you know, the parrots and stuff. So like, I'm super excited to see the East Coast. So yeah.
For those that are into research or they're into adding another course to your like lifetime bucket list, the course this year is Tunnel Ridge Ranch. Mm-hmm. They're in the Sunshine Coast area of Australia. And they've been sending you like lists of things to do while you're in Australia, which I think is kind of a neat thing for the local. I don't know if it's the local tourism body or what.
But. Yes. And I hope there's time. It's like, I always feel like we go to all these tournaments and there's not a lot of other time to do. So hopefully we have time. They have, of course, a beautiful zoo with the koalas and everything. I believe it's where the Irwins are from. So that would be super cool.
Irwin and the, come on. That's cool.
Yeah. And so we get to do that. The beaches are supposed to be just absolutely breathtaking. Hinterland and the Glasshouse Mountains, and they also have a bunch of breweries and stuff there as well. So hopefully we have time for all of that incredible, amazing stuff.
Just don't come home.
I've said that the last 2 times I went. So right. I definitely look and like check out, okay, can I get a work visa? How long can I stay? My kids are on board. My daughter actually gets to go this time. So half the package is already there. The boys I know will be totally in. So it's, you know, I'm sorry, America. I absolutely love you, but
I mean, I'm scrolling. You said, how long can I stay?
It's 3 years. I think it's 3 years. I've already looked.
The Las Vegas Challenge is February 23rd. Oh, so you can stay until at least then if you want to.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I meant like permanently. I think I can get a 3-year visa, work visa. I believe I've looked.
Don't
at
let
that
me
before.
Stop you.
we can do a country to country podcast, Grant. It should be fun.
Great. One of us in the middle of the night and the other one in the middle of the day trying to record something.
Exactly.
Wow. That would be.
It'd be fun.
That would be interesting. I think it'd be fun to listen to your accent slowly morph over time.
I do pretty good to hide my country accent most of the time until I hang around my old bestie from who's down in Texas now. You get us together and that starts to come out. But yeah, I'll try to work on my Australian accent.
Well, don't work too hard.
Okay, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Even though this year and season is kind of wrapping up, we still have a very busy rest of the year, right?
We've got some really great guests planned and some awesome topics to get us through this off season. So don't go anywhere. Make sure you keep tuning in to PDGA Radio. We'll do what we can before you venture off onto other continents, though. Okay, Jen, does that sound fair?
Sounds fair. And then hopefully I'll just bring you guys with me and we'll do a podcast over there.
Or bring me back something cool.
Yeah, little koala bear or something.
Will they let you?
A stuffed animal.
Oh, okay. That'll work. See ya.
Bye.